Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Let's do this. Another day, another dollar, another edition of The Drive. My name is Carrington Harrison. To my right, there is no one. Sports Machine Sean Levine is off today, taking an extra day for a four-day weekend. Producing this thing is Rob Brenton. Coming up in about 30 minutes, we will be joined by Danny Parkins of 670 The Score in Chicago. I will tell you why he's coming on the show momentarily. At 3 o'clock, we have John Heyman, who covers Major League Baseball. He is one of the top reporters. We'll talk to him about baseball's plan for starting its regular season. If you remember yesterday, we talked about Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson, and there was a story on Bleacher Report about which quarterback would you rather have. We actually found someone who would take Lamar Jackson over Patrick Mahomes. We will have him on the show coming up in the 4 o'clock hour. We are going to start today's show very differently than how we typically would start the show. I am very big on this show being a place of openness and transparency and letting you guys into our lives. I think that's how the show works. I recently found out that I have a daughter. Her name is Gianna. She is perfectly happy. She is perfectly healthy. And that has been an absolute blessing. As I said, we strive to be open. We strive to be transparent on this show, but from a personal standpoint, I had to get to a place where I felt comfortable enough to openly talk about this, and I wanted to get to a place where her mom and I felt comfortable enough and we were in a good place before I was ready to talk about it in this very, very open forum. And after this segment's over, I'll post a picture of her so you can see her if you want to see her. If you don't, that's perfectly fine. Rob, you can retweet it from the station account if you want, but I imagine some of you would like to see what my daughter looks like. I have never felt the way that I feel about fatherhood and what my responsibility is moving forward. It's so many emotions all kind of moving at one time that I've just never felt before. And seeing my face and seeing my eyes on another human being was one of the more surreal things I've ever seen in my entire life. And there's just no emotion, and I'm just not smart enough to accurately portray the emotion that I felt, that some of you who have kids just know that when you hold your kid for the first time and you look down at them and they look up at you and then you see your nose or your eyes or whatever your facial features are, how crazy of an emotion that is. Man, it's also terrifying. I don't know anything about kids now. I've been reading books and I've been trying to learn a lot more about it, but man, I have absolutely no clue what I'm doing. Rob, I don't think I've told you the story or not yet. I don't think I really told many people this story. So the first time that I had her, I am feeding her. And I swear to you, Rob, it was like that scene out of Men in Black 2 where the alien like instantly spits up all this stuff. So first time I have her, it's like the first 30 minutes, I'm trying to feed her. I'm trying to do my parently thing. Just bleh, everywhere, all the milk. I thought I did something wrong. Now, I didn't know if I did something wrong, but I was pretty confident that I had done something wrong. And then my mom is there, and she's kind of walking me through it, and it's certainly been a process and one that I'm really, really excited to go through. I'm hopeful. I'm anxious. I'm terrified. I'm excited. I'm all of the things that I would imagine that parents feel when they have their first kid. And on a personal level, it's really shown me the love, the support, the friendship around me. And just, I've never seen my mom like this before. And so much of my life has been kind of centered around my mom being proud of me and my mom being happy. And that's motivated me to do a lot of things. I've never seen her as excited as she is around her first granddaughter. And that's been really cool to see. My dad and I are having conversations that we probably should have had years ago. And this has really opened up our relationship, that we talk about things not so much on a father-son level, but like a friend-to-friend, and there's like a different level of understanding that we've had. And her mom and I are finding our groove and figuring out the best way to be teammates and figuring out the best way to be on the same page about how to raise our daughter and how to give her the best life that she could possibly have and give her opportunities and advantages that we didn't have growing up as kids, and trying to create that environment and know that both of her parents love her as much as they possibly can. And man, it's a sense of responsibility that I've never had and that I've never felt before. There was a time when my sister was probably 3 or 4 years old, and I remember she was playing outside and it was super windy outside. And I don't remember where my parents were at the time, but my sister saw me and came up to me and was crying her eyes out. And I didn't really understand what she was saying. And she kept saying, "Brother, make it stop, make it stop." And I had no clue what she was talking about. My sister, she's like 4 or 5 years old, thought that I could make the wind stop so she could play. And that moment has always been really impressionable on me and made me kind of see how much children look to us as adults to solve a lot of their problems. Man, that's the way that I feel now, that it's my responsibility with this little girl to be that person for her and be the best version of me that I could possibly be. So all in all, man, I'm really excited about fatherhood. I'm really excited about taking her to the zoo and getting ice cream and being annoyed by a Disney movie that she wants to watch 17 times. And I'm absolutely tired of watching and doing all of those things that make you a parent. So I thought it was really important to start the show this way. I thought it was really important for me to tell my story to you guys. If you missed the very beginning of it, I have a daughter. Her name is Gianna. She was born on St. Patrick's Day. She is very happy. She is very healthy. And Rob, what I am most happy of is her mom is a K-State fan. So my kid will never be a KU fan. Like, that's ultimately the moral of this story here. I cheer for Missouri. Her mom is an alum of K-State. My kid will never cheer for Kansas. So that in itself has made me a good parent. Like, right there. Before the kid is old, I have already succeeded in parenting. But no, on a very, very serious note, I understand that you guys come to us for sports and laughs and entertainments, but hopefully you listen to the show enough that you feel somewhat invested in our lives and that it's important to know what's going on in it. So I felt like it was important for me to tell you my story. As I said, I'll post a picture coming up after this segment. If you want to go online and see it, you are certainly more than welcome to do so. Rob, let's take a break. Coming up on the other side, I promise you, we'll talk about sports. It's The Drive.
The Drive, weekdays 2 to 6.
Back in on The Drive, coming up in about 15 minutes or so, we will be joined by Danny Parkins. It felt very appropriate to have Danny on the show in the first hour. Danny will be on the show coming up in about 15 minutes. Let's talk some sports. That's why you guys are all here. If you heard, the NFL is proposing a change for onside kick. So you already know how onside kicks go. I don't need to really explain it to you. But they are proposing a 4th and 15 play from the 25-yard line. Obviously, if you're a team like Kansas City who actually likes its quarterback and thinks your quarterback is good, this is a rule change that you should be excited about. But Andy Reid has some mixed feelings towards it.
I don't know if it's going to pass or not. I know the special teams coaches aren't real big on that. It takes away, obviously, one of the elements of theirs. And then it's also the kickoff, which has been under scrutiny here, and kickoff returns. So, to keep the integrity of the game, you like that part of it. On the other hand, if it does pass and we've got a guy that can do 4th and 15s. I mean, he would give us an opportunity to be able to do that. So, I've got kind of mixed thoughts on it. I would probably stick, being an old guy, I'd probably stick with the integrity of the game as it sits right now, but I can also see where the other part could be exciting.
I was reading an article today about the gimmickiness of this proposed rule. And this is the thing about gimmicky. I think that my generation is more accepting of these kind of rule changes because we grew up playing video games. Like, if you grew up playing Madden or you grew up playing NFL 2K, you've been going for it on fourth down way before the NFL told you it was acceptable. You were going for two when you were up seven to go up nine, and you were doing a lot of the things that were called gimmicky. Now we call analytics. And you Madden players know exactly what I'm talking about. You're comfortable going with it on fourth and 15. You got that play that you can run in that certain scenario, and you think that it's going to work every single time. So I don't think that the younger generation and the people who grew up playing Madden or Tecmo, I don't think we really view gimmicky with rule changes the way that Andy Reid's generation and the generation before us kind of views it. This is a little bit of gimmicky, and that's perfectly fine. But it's not any more gimmicky than at some point they let basketball teams hold the ball for as long as they wanted. And then someone said, hey, what if we put a shot clock on it and force teams to shoot to speed the game up, make it more exciting? Or at some point, every shot was worth 2 points in basketball. And then someone had this crazy idea of, hey, what if we draw this circle around the basket? And if you shoot from behind the basket, that shot's worth more than if you shoot a shot inside of the line. I'm sure on Sports Talk Radio back when they were doing that, everybody called it gimmicky and said it doesn't make any sense. It's never going to work. People aren't going to like it. Guess what? We like it. And the three-point shot has revolutionized the game and improved the quality of it from a visual standpoint. I think that this rule is going to be something very similar. So to give you some numbers, teams recover onside kicks at a 4% clip. 4% clip. So 96% of the time when they line up to do an onside kick, they don't recover the onside kick. It's a waste of all of our time. They can't get the bounce right. They kick it 7 yards. They do get the bounce right, but it goes out of bounds. 4% of the time are onside kicks recovered. If you now take it with third and fourth and 15, it is at 15%. Teams convert on third and 14 or third and 15 or fourth and 15, 15% of the time. That's not a great percentage. It shouldn't be a great percentage. It's third and 15. It's fourth and 15. You don't want to make it 50% or 60%. But to me, this incentivizes it, and it gives teams like Kansas City a better chance of winning. It gives teams like Seattle a better chance of winning. It gives teams like Houston with Deshaun Watson a better chance of winning. And if anything, it makes the game more exciting. I am all for rules that make football a more exciting product. A couple years ago, they didn't want to get rid of the extra point. So they had the idea. Let's keep it. Let's just move it back and make it more difficult. And you got to admit, the extra point is more exciting. Now, they still make it at an incredible pace, but it was 99%. 4 extra points got missed the last regular season that we had it where it was. You move it back, it's not as automatic anymore, which changes the strategy of the game. So to Reed's point about gimmicky, and Rob, I'm curious to what you hear about it because you do hear this rule as a little bit gimmicky. I think a lot of really innovative rules are looked at as gimmicky, whether it's rules on the field or rules in how we kind of view the game. But typically, we come to adapt to them. They become, quote unquote, the new normal, to throw a phrase that we've been throwing out there a whole lot over these last couple of weeks. And then it becomes commonplace. I don't think that this fourth and 15 rule is going to be much different.
I guess where we differ is when I saw the language clarified on this rule. Because yesterday when you were talking to Sean and you said, I was all with you. I like the creativeness. I like that it's different. I think the NFL is heading toward a place where we don't see kickoffs and things of that nature. I think that's the trend we're headed towards. So eliminating the onside kick is just a step in that direction. But when I reviewed the language, it says you can only try this twice a game. Which then I think, well, now that's dumb. Because if you can do it every time, if you can score, go up 7-0, and then onside kick fourth and 15, you get it. You then drive down the field again, 14-0, and you do this on an endless loop, and you boat race. If you're the Chiefs and you boat race the helpless Bengals, I don't care. That's awesome. That's the Bengals' fault for not being able to stop you on fourth and 15. What I don't like is that you've limited this to 2 times per game. Because now it becomes a thing where instead of a potential advantage for an elite offense, it becomes this thing where it's like, yeah, it's kind of like the onside kick and we don't want you doing it all the time. So really ignore this rule for 90% of the game, which I think makes it a gimmick.
That part I think is very fair, but I think the argument for the NFL would be, and I'll play for what Tom Pelissero had to say coming up in just a little bit. I think their case is we don't want to create it where this is a part of team strategy. So a team like Kansas City that is far better at quarterback, they can somewhat break the mold. It doesn't matter how good your kicker is. You could have Justin Tucker, you could have Harrison Bucker, or you could have the worst kicker in the NFL. Very few teams just randomly try onside kicks or have a kicker that you feel gives you a substantial advantage when it comes to it, so it doesn't break the competitiveness of the league. That I think they're trying to do the exact same thing here. Some teams are far better at quarterbacks, far better at offense than other teams. So let's reward those teams just a little bit, but let's not create a rule where those teams can break it and then damage the competitiveness of the game. And let's create scenarios in which teams would normally go for onside kicks. Even now, even before they really changed the rule, you didn't see a whole lot of surprise onside kicks. Sometimes teams did it. We saw it in the Super Bowl. But we can't think of a whole bunch of examples where onside kicks were just happening all the time. They typically happen in the scenario that the NFL is proposing. They typically happen when you're down late in the game. You never see more than two onside kicks in a game. So I think the NFL is trying to serve both masters here and try to find that right sweet spot when it comes to competitive balance. What's a way to make our game more exciting and more fun? What's also a way where teams can't abuse this rule?
Yeah, I get that. But to your competitive balance point, there aren't limitations on other potential competitive advantages. We saw the Ravens go for it on fourth down an incredible amount last year, which is a competitive advantage because you have fourth down to get extra yardage. There was no rule the Ravens, you can go for it on fourth down, but only when you're trailing in the fourth quarter. You only go for it, you know, with 8 minutes left on the clock. I don't like when you create situations for a rule. I think the rule should be the rule. And frankly, I think things like the two-point conversion going up for on fourth down and things like that where the analytics show it's smarter to do it every time, I'm sure when you have an elite quarterback, the analytics will show do the onside kick every time if you are allowed. So my problem with the competitive balance thing is when you create stipulations on a rule, I think it proves the rule is so imperfect that you should not add it.
I want to play this audio for you. This is Tom Pelissero of NFL Network. Here's his reporting on the proposed onside kick rule in the NFL.
An alternative that a team could choose to use twice a game to, instead of attempting the traditional onside kick, they could go for it on a 4th and 15 from their own 25-yard line and attempt to retain possession that way. Now, one other thing that we learned overnight was that contrary to a summary that initially went out saying that this would allow a trailing team to keep the ball, the actual language of the proposal does not mention anything about trailing. In other words, whether a team is ahead or behind on a scoreboard, they could choose to use one of those two opportunities to go for it on the 4th and 15, which, Mike, sets up some really interesting strategy decisions, and you have to wonder who the first coach would be to say we're going to go down and score on the opening possession, convert a 4th and 15, and then double up to make it 14-0 before the other quarterback touches the ball.
So that's Tom Pelissero of NFL Network. I do think there is momentum that is pushing in the direction that I do think this is going to be passed. And if you're a fan of the Kansas City Chiefs, which I'm going to assume a majority of you are fans of the Kansas City Chiefs, this is a rule that you should absolutely welcome. Mahomes has been so dominant in these scenarios that this gives you a pretty clear competitive advantage, I think, over other teams in the NFL. Man, you should feel really comfortable because there's a lot of teams that don't want this to pass because they quarterback ain't able. And I'm looking at a tweet from Adam Teicher. So the Chiefs didn't go for it on 4th and 15 or longer last year, but Mahomes likes it. He was 12-6 for 255 yards and 3 touchdowns on 3rd and 15 or more in the regular season in his career, and that doesn't count WASP in the Super Bowl. So if you're a Chiefs fan, you should absolutely love this. And I understand what Rob is saying when he calls the rule a little bit gimmicky. But man, I think a lot of things in sports, the first time we hear them or the first time we see them are gimmicky and we end up liking it. I'm sure the first time that they put the yellow line on the television, we all thought this was dumb and this was never going to last. I don't want to watch a football game that doesn't have the yellow line on the television. I think eventually we will end up liking this, and I think eventually we will end up accepting it, and I think it's going to make the game a more exciting and entertaining product. Coming up next, keep it locked in right here on The Drive on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, and the radio.com app. We will be joined by Danny Parkins of 670 The Score to talk about being a father and The Last Dance. That's coming up next. It's The Drive.
The Drive,
610 Sports Radio.
No Levine, so there's no Levine's list. Rob has decided to make his own list. I have not seen it. I don't know what's on the list. I assume that it's going to be fantastic, but we'll find out momentarily. You're listening to The Drive on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, and the radio.com app. It seemed very fitting, giving the announcement at 2 o'clock, to have on our next guest. He is an afternoon host in Chicago with 670 The Score. His name is Danny Parkins. Park, what's good?
Good afternoon, C-Dot. Papa C-Dot. Man, there's two Papa C-Dots now. That's exciting.
It hit me probably 3 days ago that I'm going to be celebrating Father's Day, and I'm not going to lie, it was kind of weird. Like, it kind of tripped me out for a second. I'm like, damn, people are going to tell me that, and they're going to get me gifts.
I mean, I don't know about how many gifts you're going to get, but you're gonna get some Happy Father's Day and maybe a card or a call or two. But, yeah, maybe you'll get a gift. What do you want for Father's Day this year, Kerry? What can I get for you?
I mean, right now, how things are going, money. That would definitely be the biggest help right now.
Right, exactly. No, man, listen, I'm very proud of you. I thought the opening segment was great. I thought the tease was hilarious. Like, all right, here's the breaking news. I'm a father, coming up next. On sidekick hypotheticals. Like, I love it. It's what we do. But I will say, like, listen, I know that, like, it's, you know, best laid plans and, you know, life gets curveballs and all of that. Like, put all that aside, and I know it's not like how you draw it up or anything like that. None of that matters. You're going to be an amazing dad, and it's awesome. Like, you are, when you sent me that picture of Gianna a couple of days ago, I didn't want to say it because, like, but you stole your thunder right there in the open. Like, dude, those are your eyes. Like, those are your eyes. And it's been funny because most people have been saying that, like, Owen looks exactly like me. And then when recently, as he's grown, a few more things have started to look like Steph. And she's so happy about that because you put it beautifully. Like, seeing yourself in another human being is such a powerful moment. And I just want you to know, I want to reassure you, you're going to be a great dad. Diaper changing is not that hard. Don't be scared. And, you know, let us know if you ever need any help or advice, because we're figuring it out as we go. There's no real manual. Are you actually reading any of these books? Are you reading them?
I actually have been reading a book just a little bit. I'm trying to figure out what I'm doing in this scenario. I have absolutely no clue. I'm sure that most people feel like they have no clue. I feel like I have less than no clue.
Well, sure. And reading a book is good, but I'm telling you, man, it's you're not going to break her. Like, it's you know, just don't drop her. I would recommend not dropping her, but you don't need a book to know that. But, like, just change the diaper. If you put it on backwards, who cares? Pick her up, burp her, bathe her. Like, you know what I mean? Like, just figure it out as you go. And here's the thing. Do you remember anything that happened when you were 3 months old? Do you remember a single thing?
I do not remember.
So, you're not going to damage her emotionally or psychologically. Like, that's years down the line. So anything that you do right now, any of the damage, as long as you don't drop her, is not going to be permanent. So that's my first piece of parental advice to you. It's just, like, dive in head first, get in there, and if you mess some stuff up, who cares? The kid's not going to remember it anyway.
Right now we're talking to Danny Parkins from 670 The Score. I actually do want to have you on to talk about The Last Dance. You're a big Jordan fan. I remember you and I used to always joke that you were going to name your kid after Michael Jordan. How does it feel now to watch 10 hours of lies? Because, like, you were really excited about it, I'm sure. But now that we've seen this full 10-hour documentary, and I can probably tell you about 12 pretty clear and blatant lies, I just want to know if you look at Michael Jordan the same after that documentary.
What are you talking about?
I mean, the lies? We could go through all the lies. The traveling cocaine circus.
Four of them. I want to know what you're talking about. Go ahead. Name three or four.
Traveling cocaine circus lie. You want me to believe that a senior year Michael Jordan is around all these adults, women, booze, drugs, all this kind of gambling, I'm sure, is going on, and Mike was just getting rest, and Mike wasn't a part of it? He was out here snitching. Number two.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, number two.
Yeah, and
Pizzagate story. At this point, I don't know what the truth is anymore. I don't care what it is. I don't know if it was flu or food poisoning or being hungover. I have absolutely no clue.
Yeah,
that was
agreed.
A lie.
Okay, we're in agreement.
He told us a story about hooping LeBradford Smith, who has scored 20 or more points four times in the NBA. They really took a section out of this documentary to highlight the fact that Michael Jordan scored on a player that none of us have ever heard of before. Lie.
Yeah, and he made it up. And he made up him saying nice game. Like, yeah, okay, yeah.
Lie. And he wants.
Can I let me tell you something.
Okay, my bad.
Was this a 360-degree journalistic examination of Michael Jeffrey Jordan? No, it was not. Would I love that? Yes, I would. But Michael Jordan has spent an entire lifetime crafting and curating a public image that he wants out there, and he had final cut over this documentary. So was this pure journalism? No, but it was pure entertainment. And I'll make this analogy for you. You're the king of the analogy. State-run television. Like, Michael Jordan can be Kim Jong-un, and I'm a resident of North Korea. Like, I don't need anything else. Like, you know what I mean? Was this perfect journalism? No, it was not. But I want to know what Michael's selling, because I buy his shoes. I bought Space Jam. I bought his cologne. I went to his summer camp. I wore his clothing. I want his golf shoes. Like, yes, absolutely. I'm a Michael Jordan sycophant. So was everything he said in this thing truthful? No. But was everything he said in this documentary damn entertaining? You're damn right.
I'm curious, as a lifelong Bulls fan, how you feel about how Scottie Pippen was portrayed. I made this point the Monday after the documentary. Pippen would have been hated on Twitter, and we probably would have treated him like Kyrie Irving had he been around during the social media era. As a Bulls fan, do you think that Pippen was portrayed correctly in the documentary?
I think that Scottie Pippen's gaffes or blemishes were highlighted to a disproportionate amount in the documentary because conflict sells. And that doesn't mean that they should not be included, right? He signed that terrible contract early. He was horrendously underpaid. He didn't handle it well. Bulls management, frankly, didn't handle it well. They could have gone to him earlier for a contract extension to give him more money. But Jerry Krause wanted to trade him multiple times throughout his career because of how much Pippen went at Jerry Krause. So management owns some blame of that. He threw the chair. He didn't go back in with 1.8 seconds. He delayed that surgery so he could enjoy his summer, and then it delayed his ability to get back on the court. He did all of those selfish things, and then the most mind-boggling part of it all was when he was asked about 1.8 seconds, he said he wouldn't change anything. Like, that just doesn't even make any sense, because he has said that it was the wrong thing to do, so why he wouldn't change anything is totally nonsensical. But you also have to remember, in the midst of all of this, the 50th anniversary of the NBA happens, All-Star Weekend, Cleveland, 1997. Scottie Pippen is named one of the 50 greatest players in the sport's history. He was the perfect running mate for Michael Jordan. There was no better athletic perimeter duo. He helped take some of the defensive burden off of Michael when he needed it, which wasn't often. So I thought that the greatness of Scottie Pippen as a basketball player was actually undertold in the documentary. Jordan did say, you know, when people talk about Michael Jordan winning six titles, they should say the same about Scottie Pippen, because I didn't win any without him, he didn't win any without me, which is pretty damn high praise considering the source being Michael Jordan. So I get why Scottie is upset about it, because he actually was a beloved teammate. And Horace Grant, Stacey King, B.J. Armstrong, Craig Hodges, they've all come out after the documentary and talked about how Will Perdue, Bill Wennington, they've all come out and said, you know, that Scottie was beloved despite some of these things that you saw in the documentary. So was it like a fair, well-rounded, total telling of the Scottie Pippen story? No, it wasn't, but a lot of things were left on the cutting room floor, even though it was 10 hours long.
I've got two more questions to ask you, Danny. I appreciate you coming on. What do you make of Horace Grant's I Hate Michael Jordan press run that he's going on?
I wish he was doing it on my show.
I mean, I didn't want to say that. I didn't know how you felt about it. I didn't want to throw that out here in public. When I saw 1000 ESPN Chicago, I'm like, hold on. Why didn't Danny get this interview? We have Horace Grant's number. How did you not book him?
oh, we've been trying. Don't trust me. We've been trying. Good job by them. Like, they got him to pick up the phone at the right time. You know, timing is everything. So, yeah, good job by them. Wish it was on my show. It wasn't. Wasn't for a lack of effort. You know, I think that anybody has a right to their opinion. Like, I don't really feel any differently about Michael Jordan after this because I knew all of this stuff. Like, he sacrificed everything in terms of, like, a well-rounded personal life in order to be the greatest competitor in the history of team sports. And so that's, like, the trade-off that he made, and it got him 6 titles, but it didn't get him the most friends in the world. So I think Horace Grant has every reason to feel the way that he does, and, you know, so be it. I still love Horace Grant, but I love Michael Jordan more.
I just want to make this last point before you get out of here, Danny, and I really appreciate your time, certainly while you're having vacation. I just want to point out that this football season, I'm planning on covering a team that's coming off winning a Super Bowl and I think is going to win 13, maybe 14 games, and you're covering a team that's going to win, what, 5 games next year, you think? Six,
dude,
maybe? Six,
can
maybe.
You, can you get, can you, listen.
Six,
you're
possibly.
You're a father now. You're a dad. You're maturing, okay? This is a time of growth. This is a time of expanding your horizons. This is a time of trying new things, seeing what else is out there, the grass maybe being greener, try some new foods, read some new books, develop some new hobbies, get some new jokes. We know, okay? The 2017 draft happened. It went poorly. Pat Mahomes is giggling at the ease at which converting 4th-and-15 would be to get an extra possession. Meanwhile, Mitch Trubisky is, like, asking for permission to get on Zoom calls with draft picks so he could welcome him to the team because he doesn't know whether or not he's the starting quarterback and if it's appropriate anymore. Okay? The teams are in different places organizationally. I get it. Get some new material. Your daughter deserves it.
That is Danny Parkins with 670 The Score in Chicago. Parkins, man, it was an honor to have you on. There was no guest I wanted to have on today's show more than you, man. Thanks a lot for making time.
Hey, man, happy Father's Day early.
Thanks, man. You too. That is my guy, Danny Parkins, joining us on the show. Coming up next, Rob says, although Sean's not here, he has made a list for himself. We'll hear it coming up. So drive.
The Drive. Weekdays 2 to 6.
Back in on The Drive on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, and the radio.com app. Coming up in 15 minutes, we will be joined by John Heyman, who covers Major League Baseball, to talk about baseball's plan of starting its regular season. Sean is off today, so Rob has decided to make his own list. I don't know what his list is about, but Rob has decided that he is going to make his own list today. We'll do that coming up in about 5 minutes. I want to play some audio for you. So you guys know my stance on this, but if you don't know, I'll refresh your memory. I'm not interested in watching 53-year-old Mike Tyson fight 57-year-old Evander Holyfield. It sounds absolutely terrible. But Evander Holyfield went on the Chris Mannix podcast on Sports Illustrated and is talking about why he wants to fight Mike Tyson. Evander, we know why you want to fight Mike. You got to be broke. The only reason why you're 50-something years old and you're interested in competing in a combat sport is because the money is run out. Nobody's saying that you're too old to compete in something. Play checkers. Play backgammon. Play Scrabble against Mike Tyson. Maybe a nice round of golf or shuffleboard. But nobody is interested in watching you two in a combat sport. But I'm starting to see that I'm in the minority. You guys want Tyson and Holyfield to fight each other. I think you're sick, but you guys want those two to fight each other. So that's not what I want to play for you guys first. What I want to play for you guys is Evander Holyfield on this podcast was asked a very simple question. When Mike Tyson bit your ear, why did you not bite Mike back?
He bit my ear, man, and I remember just how mad I was and how upset I was. And, you know, and I realized that I was going to bite him back. But in the point of me knew that I was going to bite him back, my corner guy named Tim Hallmark, because his partner had told us in the match that this guy gonna do something to you, and you know, and for me not to lose my cool and all that, he told me to keep my mind on the Lord. And so I told my trainer Tim Hallmark to to remind me if that do happen. And he kept calling and telling me, keep your mind on the Lord. But I didn't want to keep my mind on the Lord. I wanted to bite him back. And then all of a sudden it came across my mind what my grandmama said, they always catch the person who do it the second time. So I decided not to bite him back. And he bit me again.
No, he did bite you again, Evander. They say they always catch you the second time. We caught the first and the second bite. It's not like that first one slipped past us, my guy. It's not like the first time that Mike took a bite out of your ear. We were like, did that happen? No, we knew. And then the way that you reacted, and then Mike was still losing in the fight because he typically lost to anybody who actually had some boxing chops. He then bit you again because he knew he was going to get knocked out soon enough. Like, we knew that was going to happen. You were going to win the fight. Tyson, buddy, Holyfield, if you guys need a little bit of paper, just do what the rest of us do and start a GoFundMe. Start an OnlyFans account if you guys are that hard up for money and figure out something to do. But this combat sport thing ain't for you. And I wish Holyfield would have just answered the question correctly. Why didn't you bite Tyson? Because it's gross. Because that's not the response you should have as a fully grown adult. Your response when someone does something like that should not be, well, I should bite him back. That should not be the response. I can't believe we were talking about this. This is peak quarantine that people are interviewing Evander Holyfield and asking him, A, why he would want to fight Mike Tyson, and B, why did you not bite him back? Because biting him back is gross, and I have no interest in biting another human being ear to the point where I can spit their flesh onto the canvas the way that Tyson did Holyfield. You're a sick individual if that's what you want to do, a sick individual. Coming up in 10 minutes, we'll be joined by John Heyman to talk about the start of the Major League Baseball season and what the plan is between the owners and the players. But before we do that, typically this is where I would say we need a brand spanking Levine's list. But now we need a brand spanking new Rob's rankings on the drive.
Levine's list. Yeah, we don't have production work for me. It's all you, Sean. As we know, Jerry Sloan tragically passed away today at the age of 78. So my list today, or my Rob's rankings, will be the top 10 NBA coaches who have not won an NBA title. Number 10, Byron Scott. Byron Scott stunk as the Cavs coach. It was absolutely awful, and he and Kyrie Irving had lots of beef, but he was really good with Chris Paul and the Hornets, and he's credited with making Chris Paul the player he is today. He does not have an NBA title. Number 9, Larry Bird. While short-lived, he did run up against the Jordan Bulls, the Knicks, and Shaq and Kobe's Lakers. He was dominant in 3 years as a coach, took L's every time.
Very, very, very difficult to get your first ring if those are the teams that you're running up against.
Bumping up against Hall of Famers at every turn.
I mean, two dynasties, the Bulls and the Lakers, two dynasties.
The Knicks one is a little bit unforgivable, but. Number 8, Brad Stevens. Brad Stevens has also had a little bit of a problem in the East. He keeps bumping into LeBron James. Now LeBron is gone, he's bumping into Giannis Antetokounmpo. That is tough living, but he has made the Celtics great every single season. Number 7, the Czar, Mike Fratello. I was shocked to find out he did not have a title. I thought for sure he had one. Number 6, Rick Adelman. Poor guy was so great with those Kings teams, and they just kept running into the aforementioned Shaq and Kobe Lakers. He had a lot of talent. Mike Bibby. He had Bobby Jackson, Chris Webber, Peja Stojakovic, Vlade Divac. That team was good. Doug Christie. It's a good team. Not better than Shaq and Kobe's Lakers.
Doug Christie, word to Matt Barnes.
Number 5, Mike D'Antoni. Another guy who keeps running into better teams. Innovative offensive system. He made Steve Nash an MVP. He has James Harden and the Rockets as an offensive juggernaut, but they keep running into the Warriors. And when he was with the Suns, they kept running into the Lakers.
If you don't like the NBA, which I imagine some of you listening right now aren't fans of the NBA, the Rockets are the reason that you don't like the NBA. Every complaint that you currently have about the NBA is all wrapped up into one team. Like, you can't say, like, a lot of the misconceptions people have about the NBA, you can't say about the Lakers. You can't say about the Raptors. You can't say about the Milwaukee Bucks. You can say all of them about the Houston Rockets, every single one.
Yeah, I'm not a huge James Harden guy. His game kind of annoys me, but I respect his game. But
everybody is annoyed by James Harden's game. Everybody.
Number 4, George Karl. George Karl, similar to Mike D'Antoni, always developed an excellent offensive system, but in Seattle, He had some bad luck and also bumped into Jordan's Bulls. And then he was good in Denver. He had Melo. He had Iverson. They were good. They could never get over the hump. He's number four on the best coaches that ever won an NBA title. Number three, Hubie Brown. Probably better known for our age as being an excellent color commentator.
I love Hubie. I really do. He's so good. Hubie.
I wish he had won a title as a coach just so that make him even better as an analyst, I think.
You know you're old when you remember Hubie and then Dr. Jack Ramsey calling games, mm-hmm. and you don't remember them for coaching.
Number two, the aforementioned Jerry Sloan. I feel bad for Jerry Sloan because the last memory I have of him as a coach was the beef he got into with Deron Williams. And I remember at the time thinking both people were in the wrong and should never have escalated this public of a situation. But outside of that little beef with Deron Williams, the Jazz were always good. And you want to know why? It's because Jerry Sloan's an excellent coach. But again, you run into Jordan and the Bulls. And then all of a sudden in your own conference is the Dynasty Lakers. It's tough sledding to win a title.
We're starting to hear a lot of common themes of they ran into the Jordan Bulls.
That's how great coaches fail. Like,
five of these coaches, why do they not win? Well, they ran into the Bulls.
Yeah. And number one, Don Nelson. Don Nelson was awesome. Now, he's out in Hawaii smoking more weed than I can ever possibly fathom.
Sounds like a great life.
But he was an excellent basketball coach. He had the 8-seed Warriors winning a first-round game with Baron Davis, dunking on people. Dirk needs to credit his career to Don Nelson. Steve Nash, they traded him away, but he became a viable player under Don Nelson. Don Nelson is awesome, and it is a tragedy he does not have an NBA title. And that is today's Rob's Rankings.
This might have to be a thing, man. This might have to be a thing. Now, we got to talk to Sean. We got to get it approved. We might need a Rob ranking on a Thursday. That might be your day. You know, we step aside. We don't have a Levine's list. We let Rob's rankings flourish. Or maybe Carrington's categories. However you want to do it. You know what I mean? However you want to do it. I think that's how we could do it. Coming up next, don't turn that dial. We're very happy to be joined by John Heyman of Fansided. He is one of the top Major League Baseball reporters. If you're interested in knowing how sports can return in this country, and more specifically, Major League Baseball, John Heyman's your guy. He'll be on the show coming up next. Don't turn that dial. It's the Drive.
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. Audacy. Download it today.